Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So the more you're attached to someone, the longer and more intense the association you have with that person, the more painful it is to have to be separated. So here we have Uddhava has been Krishna's constant companion, friend, advisor, servant for so many years. And now, all of a sudden, Krishna has decided to finish his pastimes. Krishna defeated so many enemies, protected the Yadus from so many dangers. Really, there's nothing that can endanger or defeat Krishna and his dynasty. But Krishna's own desire now is to wind up his pastimes, to stick to the schedule. He was supposed to be on the earth for 125 years. The 125 years is finished. So he wants to go back, and he intends to take his devotees with him, or to send them back to their respective abodes. Still, this is very painful for his intimate devotees, especially Uddhava. So, our reading assignment for today was the first half of the section given from the fourth chapter of the third canto, verses 3 up to 22. Tomorrow's reading assignment is the rest of what is given of the fourth chapter, third canto. Go ahead. From verses 23 up to 33. Yeah? Is tomorrow a day off or what? Okay, so you have 2 days to read it. There won't be any class tomorrow. That means that we won't have 2 days off after that, number one?
After that, one day off tomorrow, and then the whole schedule moves one day ahead.
Then we get off Monday, Monday and Tuesday?
Only one day.
Only one day. Okay, I understand. So, beginning verse 3 of chapter 4 describes how Krishna, there was a warning Krishna told. The King Hussein saw that this is very inauspicious, that Samba gave birth to this iron lump, and that the sages predicted that this lump of iron will be the end of the dynasty. So Ugrasen tried to take precautions. He told them, grind up this piece, this lump of iron, and throw the pieces, if there's anything remaining, throw the pieces into the ocean. Get rid of it. But Krishna warned that the curse is going to prove true, that very soon the dynasty is going to be destroyed, and 7 days after that, the ocean is going to swallow up Dwarka, and it will disappear from the face of the earth. So, in order to do something to avert the disaster, it was advised that the princes of the Yadu dynasty go to Prabhasa, the great holy place, and perform sacrifices there. And Krishna also warned, gave a personal warning to Uddhava, Prabhupada describes in the purport in the next verse. He gave him a personal advance warning that Uddhava, you don't go to Prabhasa with everybody else. I'm sending you to Bhadrak Ashram. My pastimes are about to finish, and I have a special mission for you. But here we describe how Krishna went to the bank of the river Saraswati. This means Krishna went to Prabhasa. It's 120 kilometers south of Dwarka on the shore of the Arabian Sea. And he went to sit down under a banyan tree. Krishna, for the 125 years that he was present on this earth, he was always surrounded by his loving devotees. Practically, he was never by himself. Only the Mayavadis like to depict Krishna by himself. Now, Vaishnav etiquette is always, if you have a picture of Krishna, a deity of picture, he should never be by himself, at least a cow or somebody, a deer. Never by himself. But now he's by himself, sitting under a tree meditating. Krishna is the is Bhagavan, the original source of all opulences, the possessor in full of all godly opulences. And the sixth of these opulences is Vairagya, renunciation. So here Krishna is displaying his opulence of Vairagya. He doesn't need anybody or anything. He can sit under a tree and meditate on the Supersoul. And as easily as he came to this world, he can leave it. And he can remove his whole family, destroy the whole dynasty. He has no attachment. But Uddhava is attached. Krishna ordered him. Uddhava has a loving attachment. We cannot quite feel sympathetic with this mood of renunciation, just give it all up. Although he's being sent, he's also a great renunciant. It's not easy. Even to travel to Vadraka Ashram is not easy. It's a dangerous journey. Even if you get a vehicle, many buses go off the road. And if you go off that road, you might as well, you know, say your prayers as you just fall down the mountain and it's assumed everyone's dead. And you see, you drive up there, you can see buses, you know, that have fallen off. Even in June, there's glaciers on the roads. It's a very dangerous journey. And if you want to walk up there from the lowlands, it takes a month to walk up to Vadraka Ashram from, say, Mathura. And to live there, except for a few months in the summer, is very uncomfortable. It's very cold, inhospitable climate. In the winter means beginning in middle of October, when the heavy snows start falling, the temple of Badrinath is closed down. The pujaris move down 25 kilometers south to Joshimath, and they spend the winter there. And the deities are just locked up. One lamp is lit. And the legend is that Narada Muni does the puja for the whole winter in the Badrinath temple. Nobody remains. So, Uddhava must be a very proficient renunciant himself to be able to go to Vadraka Ashram and stay there. It's not easy for anybody to stay there. Oh boy. So he's on his way. He's not complaining that it's too cold and he doesn't want to go. Or that, you know, it's dry environment. Everyone just sits around and meditates. He'll do what Krishna asks. But what he is very unpleasant for him is that to actually leave Krishna. He can't do it. So, although he's accepting the order, somehow he's walking in the wrong direction. The boss is south, not north. And he just can't help but follow Krishna right behind him. He's trying to follow the order, but he's having a little difficulty in the beginning.
Is there some region in, like, Gangamata, in a mountain, where it's more, not so severe cold, it's more tropical?
I don't know. There might be, you mean like a tropical oasis?
I watched, like, in the, you know, the film about Madhvacharya. Well, when he goes to meet Vyas,
when he gets there, it's nice.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if it's nice like that in the winter. I mean, I went to Badrinath at the beginning of June. And, yeah, we went to Vyasadeva's cave. It was nice. You know, green grass. But that's in June. I mean, yeah, at least nowadays, anywhere up there is, except for 2 months of the summer, it's covered with snow and ice. But maybe there's some... Well, the thing is, if you go up the hills, up into the mountains, and then you enter the regions where human beings can't even go, where the Yakshas, Rakshasas, demigods live, the Gandharvas. It's the path to the heavenly planets. That's what the Pandavas were going on, that path. They went by Vyasadeva's cave. Yeah, and they were going up and up and up to try to reach heaven in the same bodies. That was their intention. So that is the path through Badrinath and further up into the mountains. Is the pathway from earth to heaven.
People like Ashwatthama, Vyasadeva, you know, they're not just simply in Badrinath, are they? They're in some
various places, yeah.
Some place which ordinary beings not able to enter into.
Yeah, but Vyasadeva's ashram, Shamyaprasa, that we read about, it's on the shore, the western side of the Saraswati. That's there, 4 kilometers north of the holy city Badrinath. You can travel up to that. Unfortunately, it seems to be on the wrong side. It's, you know, it says western side, but it looks like the eastern side of the river. But the river's there. The Saraswati is invisible, except for the source. The Saraswati comes out of a glacier right there. And you can see for 2 kilometers, you can see the Saraswati, and then it disappears underground. So it's there. The ashram is there. But nowadays, Vyasadeva won't show himself there. He's hiding up further up in the mountains. He's hiding. So anyway, there may be, when you get past the region where human beings are even allowed to enter and where they can survive, there may be places where it's a heavenly climate, well, and where it's not cold and it's not, yeah.
In relation to Madhva, that he was originally going with one person, and there were two of them, but only Madhva could go, actually enter, the other person was like thrown back.
Satyatirtha, his disciple, yeah. Yeah. So, okay, there may be, you know, there may be in the heavenly regions up there, there may be places where the climate's nice. But still, I mean, you got to be, it's not a place for weak hearts. When the Pandavas were heading that way, not at the end, when Arjuna was going to visit heaven to get the weapons needed to defeat their enemies, heavenly weapons, it was actually Vyasadeva told him to do this. Go, you know, you go to heaven, visit your father, and get the weapons you need. And they went up, not the same place, but Gandhamata Mountain. And they told, when the Pandavas were traveling in their exile, many Brahmins followed them, because Yudhishthira was very fond of Brahminical culture. And he was always maintaining the Brahmins and sitting with them and discussing Shastras. So there was a whole entourage of Brahmins that followed the Pandavas everywhere. But when it was time to go up these desolate mountain, the Gandhamata Mountain, he told them all, you know, I don't think this is for most of you. You're used to, you know, to being treated nicely, getting cooked meals. It's not going to be available when we go up the mountain. So most of you, I advise you go back to Hastinapur. Duryodhan can take care of you nicely. And only those of you who have a real taste for renunciation, you can continue up with us. But I'm warning you, it's not going to be easy. That's what Yudhishthira told the Brahmins who were following them, you know, that most of you, you better go back to Hastinapur.
So Yudhishthira also went on that
trip? Yeah, they went up the mountain and they camped, and then Arjuna went further up. You know, they were camping, in, you know, halfway up the mountain.
Gandhamata Mountain is there in Himalayas?
Gandhamata, somewhere up north. Okay, anyway, I'm just making the point that Uddhava himself is a great renunciant. Otherwise, it wouldn't be such an easy thing for him to just go up to Badrika Ashram. He'd be scared. He's not a pampered, you know, prince, although he lived with the dynasty. He's not softy who can't take some renunciation. But still, what he cannot tolerate is the idea of being immediately separated from Krishna. He has to follow him. So not out of weakness of heart or, you know, inability to take an austere path, but because he can't tolerate leaving Krishna, he follows Krishna to Prabhas. Technically, in violation of Krishna's instruction. He's supposed to be going in the other direction. And there, Uddhava saw Krishna sitting under that banyan tree. Vama Urav. This is verse 8. Vama Urav Adishritya. Dakshinangri Saroruham. Apashrit Arbakashvatam. Akrisham Chakta Pippalam. So, sitting in a yoga posture with his, how is this? His right lotus foot on his left thigh. Is that Virasana or some yoga posture, meditational posture? Krishna is, in other words, you can sit and do meditation when you finish your material activities. Of course you can practice meditating a few hours a day, but minutes a day. But when it's time, when a yogi is ready to leave this world, he sits down. That means he's finished with all his active, passionate engagements. Krishna is disengaging himself, sitting down in meditation, preparing to leave this world. But it says, apashrit arbak ashvatam, he's taking shelter of a young ashwata tree. Akrisham, and although he's manifesting his shakti of vairagya, he's not akrisham. Krisham means emaciated, thin. He's not at all suffering from renunciation. Chakta pipalam. Now, Prabhupada translates chakta pipalam. Chakta means renouncing, giving up. Pipalam, Prabhupada translates as material pleasures. He had left all household comforts. Of course, pipalam is another kind. There are four kinds of banyan trees. Nyagroda, Ashwata, Pipala, and fourth one I don't remember. So pipala is a berry that grows on a certain kind of banyan tree. Describe that Krishna has given up that material fruit. This is famous description in the Upanishads. It actually goes back to the Rig Veda about the two birds. Dva Suparnav Sayuja Sukayau. There are two companion birds. They're friends. Samanam Viksham Parishashvajate. They're taking shelter, both of them, of the same tree. Tayor Anya Pipalam. Pipalam is the word. Swadhyati. One of those two birds is trying to eat, or is eating the fruits of that tree, the pipala fruits, the berries. Not a very sweet berry, but he's thinking it's sweet. Yeah. He has a taste for those berries. Anyo anashnan abhichakashiti. The other of the two birds, he's not eating. He's not interested in those fruits. He's simply watching his friend eating the fruits. So this is, Mayavadis have their explanation, but the obvious explanation of it, they talk about one of the birds is Prakriti, the other one is Purusha. That's Mayavadi interpretation. The simple Vaishnav understanding of this shloka that actually originally comes from the Rig Veda itself, 10th mandala, is that this is the super soul and the jiva soul. They're both living together in the material body. The body is like a tree. And the jiva is trying to enjoy sense gratification, material enjoyment in this world. The super soul has no interest in that inferior enjoyment, but he's concerned for his friend. He's the witness, watching. He's watching and waiting. When is this other bird going to give up this nonsense and turn his attention back to me? Super soul is waiting patiently. So Krishna is that super soul. Chakta Pipalam, the bird that doesn't try to enjoy these bitter fruits. So that's Krishna, rather Uddhava, although he has a long-standing, intimate family and friendly and servitude relationship with Krishna. He has, especially at this moment, he's fully aware of the fact that Krishna is the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. We study Bhagavatam to understand how Krishna is God. And then we can read 10th canto. The preliminary study, the basic education, It's like if you want to become a doctor, you have to study for so many years. You know, add it all up, it comes to about 20 years of education to become a physician. And then in the end, you're allowed to start practicing medicine. They'll give you a scalpel and you can cut up somebody and try not to kill him. Like that, we study 9 cantos of Bhagavatam to prepare ourselves to be able to understand Krishna with his intimate devotees, the kind of pastimes that they enjoy. We first have to understand how Krishna is Bhagavan and Paramatma and Brahman. Understand how he is God, and they understand how he is the supreme controller in everybody's heart. So Uddhava has already been through that elementary education and beyond it. He's always has been aware that Krishna is not just another prince of the dynasty. And especially now that Krishna is disengaging himself from all this yogamaya, all this a manifestation of family affairs and dynasty affairs, royal affairs, state affairs of state. Now that's all finished. He's concentrating on the fact that Krishna is the supreme super soul. And he'll, when we hear Krishna, rather Uddhava addressing Krishna here, we'll see that. How Krishna, Uddhava, putting aside their friendly relationship, Uddhava is very, very worshipfully addressing Krishna as the supreme soul. Okay, so Uddhava is there, seeing Krishna, and all of a sudden, Maitreya Rishi appears from nowhere. He's not an unknown person. He's a very respected sage, known as Dvaipayana Sakaha. Prabhupada translates, great devotee of the Lord, and friend, and well-wisher of the great sage, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Reached that spot on his own accord. So, Uddhava is just sitting there watching Krishna. Krishna is going to notice that he's there. But before that happens, Maitreya Muni arrives. Still, what happens is that Krishna gives his attention not to Maitreya, the elder, respected sage, but to Uddhava. Practically, he ignores Maitreya. It's practical psychology. If you meet 2 or 3 people at the same time, it's hard to give attention to everybody. You don't want to, you want to be kind and friendly to everybody, but you can only talk to one person at a time, usually. So if you have an important conversation with somebody, you may be ignoring somebody else, and that has to be tolerated. So Maitreya is perfectly willing to tolerate. I'm sorry, give me a second. Maitreya is, he's not offended. It's just natural that Uddhava is the closer friend of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is giving his attention to Uddhava. Yes, ma'am? Surit and Sakha, 2 different words are there. Surit and Sakha.
How do I understand that Maitreya,
Because he's a student? I'm sorry, what did you say he was in relation? I'm sorry. You said because he's something to Vyasadeva, he can't be his well wisher. Yes.
Right? But yesterday, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So can we hear that Maitreya is the well-wisher of the earth? I just want to understand it.
Yeah, well, that's in their external relationship. Vyasadeva is superior because he's probably a jiva. I don't think Vyasadeva is Vishnu Tattva, but he's empowered, Shakti Veshavatar. Mm-hmm. Maitreya is just another rishi and not a pure devotee. But they have their external relationship. They have been reciprocating with one another as friends, as close friends. So that's to his credit, that's to Maitreya's credit, that he has this friendly association with Vyasadeva. Even though you might say, well, this is incongruous, how can he be considered Vyasadeva's equal? Anyway, Vyasadeva, out of his kindness, accepted Maitreya as his. Vyasadeva is playing the pastime. He may be the empowered incarnation of Narayan, but he's appearing as a human being, as a human sage, not as a demigod sage like Narada, but he's appearing among the sages in the human race. And there are many elder sages. Many sages live for millions of years, for the duration of a manvantara. What's his name? Markandeya lives for 7 manvantaras. He's still around. So Vyasadeva is a newcomer. He's a young boy. He's still only 5,000 years old. And we have sages running around who are millions of years old. Still, he's respected as the greatest of sages. Yeah, for who he is and what he's done. But still, on the external level, he's just a young boy among the sages. And Maitreya is older than him. So, in the external relationship, it's natural for Maitreya and Vyasadeva, in the company of sages, one from one sage with another, to be close friends. And they have some personal affinity. I don't know the history exactly of the relationship between Maitreya and Vyas, but apparently they have some personal chemistry between the two of them, some affinity.
Who is the spiritual master of Maitreya?
It's Parashara, right? Vyasadeva's father? Or the other way around. No, it's the other way around. Maitreya was teaching Parashara.
Parashara who teaches Maitreya.
It is? Okay. Yeah, so at least one of the Shiksha gurus. Yeah. Maitreya heard the Vishnu Purana, the instructions of the Vishnu Purana from Parashara. Okay. He may have, the Diksha guru is probably somebody else, but that, he's... Parashara is one of his gurus. That's Vyasadeva's father. That's where the friendship comes from. They're godbrothers. Yeah. Parashara taught Vyas, and Parashara also taught Maitreya.
The cyclic succession of Parashara, that's coming from four Kumars originally.
Yeah, Parashara is also in. That's the, you mean the cyclic succession of the Bhagavatam, of the reciting of the Bhagavatam. There's the cyclic succession through Vyas and Shukadev, and then there's the cyclic succession through Maitreya and Vidura. It's a different cyclic succession of Bhagavatam. And Parashara. Sorry, taught Maitreya? I got it right? Okay. And Parashara learned from Sankhyayana Muni. Sankhyayana learned from Lord Sankarsana, right? Or, I don't know, Sankarsana taught the four Kumaras. They taught Sankhyayana. They taught Parashara, and Parashara taught Maitreya. Maitreya taught Vidura. And Shukadeva tells us what Maitreya told Vidura. Okay. So, here we have Maitreya also there. Not a person, unknown person, not a person to be neglected, except that Uddhava is Krishna's, one of Krishna's closest companions. So Krishna gives all his attention here and speaks not to Maitreya but to Uddhava. Maitreya is very happy to just be sitting there and listening. Maitreya was greatly attached to him, the Lord Krishna. And he was listening in a pleasing attitude, with his shoulder lowered. It's relaxed. If you're like this, you're tense. If you lower your shoulders, you're relaxed. With a smile and a particular glance upon me, having allowed me to rest, Krishna, the Lord, spoke as follows. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport that Krishna was thinking of Maitreya as a Jnana Bhakta, that his devotion was mixed with the desire to have knowledge in order to get liberation. Yeah. And he explains here, next purport, that pure devotees aren't primarily interested in getting a lot of information, acquiring knowledge. Sometimes they have questions to ask when they're confused about something, when the pastimes seem to be contradictory, but they're interested in Krishna's loving dealings. He's not interested in so many technical things. That's the business of the Jnana Bhaktas. They want to understand how everything works. And they study Vedanta. We don't study Vedanta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, we have Bhagavatam. This is the explanation of Vedanta by the author himself, the Akritramabhasha of Vedanta Sutras, Srimad Bhagavatam. So our interest is in our Sampradaya, the Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, study Srimad Bhagavatam. The other Vaishnava Sampradayas, they're very much interested in the study and the debates on Vedanta Sutra. You know, if you want to be a real proponent of the Sampradaya, you have to know Vedanta philosophy. You have to be able to argue with opponents and deal with everything very technically. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, explains that these other Sampradayas, Vaishnava Sampradayas, they're primarily Vichara-atmaka Bhakti. They're practicing Vichara-atmaka Bhakti. Vichara means philosophical discussion. So, in these other Sampradayas, Madhva Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya especially, the acharyas, they write commentaries and sub-commentaries and sub-sub-commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. Also Bhagavatam, but they're very much interested in studying and arguing on the basis of Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra is for philosophers. It explains the absolute truth, but theoretically and very technically. In contrast, our Gaudiya Sampradaya is primarily not Vicharatmaka, but Rasatmaka. We're interested in the taste, the ecstatic exchanges of loving devotion. And so we don't go so much into technicalities when not necessary, when it doesn't promote the propagation of rasa. Yeah.
What are the two words you just mentioned?
Vichara. Vichara atmaka, rasatmaka, rasa. So we can put Maitreya Muni in the category of the devotees who are vicharatmaka, who are interested in philosophical discussions, trying to understand the absolute truth theoretically. So Krishna, therefore, is more interested in talking to Uddhava, who is an unalloyed pure devotee. Uddhava is also, just like he's... also very renounced. He's also very learned. He's just as good a Vedantist as Maitreya or anybody else. But that erudition is eclipsed by his unalloyed devotion. Yeah. Because he's a Rasatmaka Bhakta, a devotee who wants not even beyond the relationship, like the devotees in Dwarka. Their interest is in their family relationship with Krishna. But Uddhava transcends that. He's not approaching him as Krishna's old advisor. He's approaching him in a whole different mood. Yeah. Therefore, Krishna is immediately reciprocating with Uddhava rather than Maitreya. Prabhupada says, the Lord reciprocates with his devotees on the basis of transcendental love and not on the basis of philosophical knowledge or fruitive activities. And Prabhupada talks about in the purport the gopis in Vrindavan, who weren't gyanis and they weren't karmis, they hadn't done any auspicious ritualistic activities to give them any credit, nor had they studied anything philosophically. But because of their absolute surrender to Krishna, because they lived only for Krishna's pleasure, therefore Krishna accepted them in this role. There are many other young girls that Krishna can consort with. And the gopis could have taken birth in male bodies. You know, some of them were sages in their previous life, in the body of sages. They could have taken demigod bodies. They could have taken animal bodies. Krishna arranged for them to take birth as gopis in Vrindavan. Because of their attitude of complete surrender and absolute selflessness. Therefore, Krishna, they took this birth to be with Krishna in the role of his girlfriends. Prabhupada says, the gopis in Vrindavan were neither highly learned scholars nor mystic yogis. They had spontaneous love for the Lord, and thus he became their heart and soul. And the gopis also became the heart and soul of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya approved of the relationship of the gopis with the Lord as supreme. Aradhyo Bhagavata. This is explained by Srinath Chakravarti, one of the elder associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even before Rupa and Sanatan wrote their books, before Sanatana Goswami wrote his Vaishnava Toshani commentary on Bhagavatam, Srinath Chakravarti wrote a complete commentary on the Bhagavatam. It's the oldest commentary among the Gaudiya Vaishnavas on Bhagavatam. It's called Chaitanya Mata Manjusha. And the Mangalacharana verse at the beginning of that commentary is very famous. Prabhupada quotes it. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vajeshatanayas Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam Ramya Kachirupasana Vajavadu Vargena Yakalpita. So that's the first half of the verse. That this is the philosophy, this is our Siddhanta, philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his teachings. That the supreme worshipable Lord is the son of the king of Raja. And Tad Dhamma, and his place, his personal abode, is Sri Dham Vrindavan. And the most favorable, Ramya, the most pleasing, meaning the mode of worship that gives Krishna the most pleasure, is that which was practiced by the young gopi girls of Vrindavan. Vajavadu Vargenya Yakalpita. Uddhava has learned that when he was earlier sent by Krishna to visit Vrindavan, he saw for himself how the mode of serving and worshipping Krishna as that is exhibited by the gopis in Vrindavan, that is the best, the highest form of worshipping Krishna. This is one of the secrets of our mysteries of our Gaudiya Sampradaya. It is not fully appreciated by other Vaishnavas. Other Sampradayas, they have to accept that Krishna is one of the major avatars of Vishnu. All the Vaishnav, Orthodox Vaishnav Sampradayas revere Srimad Bhagavatam and study it. And Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes occupy half of the 10th canto. So they have to recognize the significance that this is, you know, major pastimes of the Lord. Still, other Sampradayas generally cannot understand that this is the highest worship of Krishna. That the gopis are the greatest devotees. In the Madhva Sampradaya, they explain the gopis that they're apsaras who took birth in Krishna's pastimes. Yeah. Just dancing girls from heaven. They cannot understand the exalted position of the gopis. But Uddhava has learned this. He's an honorary member of the Gaudiya Sampradaya because he has the same Siddhanta. And it's a rare understanding. This was taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, hardly anybody understood this. Chaitanya Mata Manjusha. It's never been translated. It's available. You can get it in... I don't know if it's in print anywhere.
Can you tell us a little more about Srinath Chakravarti? Where did he associate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
One of Srivas Thakur's brothers was named Srinath. I don't know if that's the same person. Srivas Thakur has three brothers. One of them was named Srinath, but that may be somebody else.
But they're Srivas Pandit. They weren't called Chakravarti.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Chakravarti is a Bengali name for Pandits, but I don't know if that was their family name. I don't know. It's probably somebody else, yeah. I don't know. Could find out, but I don't know. Yeah. I have a copy, an old copy. I don't know if it's in print anywhere. All 12 cantos. It's a 200-page book. It's not a very long commentary. It's been superseded. It's not studied much anymore because Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami's commentaries, Vishnu Chakravarti's commentaries are much more prominent.
That verse you quoted, I understood that was spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself.
Oh, no, that comes from that commentary. That was Srinath Chakravarti giving his opinion of what's the philosophy, the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada quotes it, but it comes from that commentary.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that a of all types of worship.
No, that verse at the end, the last line. Yeah, and the last line of the verse says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matama Idam. This is the opinion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, that's what but I thought
of
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
No, it was Srinath Chakravarti is saying that in the verse, that this is the opinion. This is the opinion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. Anyway, so now Krishna addresses Uddhava. And he calls him Vasu. And this, where's his verse 11? He calls him Vasu. That was in his previous birth. The expansion of Uddhava was living on the heavenly planets as one of the eight Vasus. Those are principal demigods. They're actually also sons of Aditi and Kashyapa. There's the 11 Adityas, there's also the 8 Vasus. And Uddhava, he's not the original Uddhava is an eternal associate of Krishna in Dwarka, in Goloka Dwarka. But he has an expansion, a partial expansion on the heavenly planets. Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, also has an expansion among the 8 Vasus, the Vasu named Drona. This is another Vasu. Krishna addresses him as Vasu. And he says, I understand, I remember what was in your mind when long ago, in your previous life, you worshipped me with the desire to have my constant association. And now, I promise you, you're going to gain that. Of course, he's already had Krishna's association for several decades. But he's promising him that you'll get my eternal association now. Actually, Uddhava is an eternal associate of Krishna in the spiritual sky. But in this partial expansion, he's in the mood of a demigod. And these Vasus were performing ritual sacrifice. They were doing karmakanda sacrifices. That's what demigods generally do. They worship the Lord by performing yajnas. They're generally not pure devotees. They're karma mishrabhaktas. Just like Maitreya is a jnana mishrabhakta, a philosopher. The demigods are generally karma mishrabhaktas. They're fruitive workers, and they also worship Krishna. But they have so many material desires that they're on the level of practically of karmis, or karma mishrabhaktas. Yeah, they want to enjoy this world. They're not ready to leave so soon. You know, they'd like to get liberation sooner or later, but they want to stick around and enjoy and control for a while. That's karma mishrabhakti. This Vasu, who was Uddhava's expansion, he was participating in these sacrifices with the other Vasus, but he had a special desire in his heart. He wasn't thinking, let me enjoy, let me get a high position, stay in heaven and enjoy. He was thinking, I want to be Krishna's, I'm attracted to Krishna and I want to be his eternal associate. So he did his fruitive sacrifice, but he did it with a devotional intention. And Krishna says, I was aware of this. I remember what you were thinking. And therefore, I've picked you out and I'm going to give you what you want. Yeah. Because he already has. Uddhava already has gotten the benefits of Krishna's intimate association like no one else has among all the yadus. But he tells him that this is now, sadhu. Sadhu means someone who's successful in life. The verb sad means to succeed, to achieve something. So a sadhu is someone who has achieved the purpose of his life. We in India the word is used loosely. Anybody who wears saffron and matted locks is a sadhu. But sadhu really means a person who's actually successful in life. So this is your last birth. That's your success. Not that we're going to promote you to heaven, or you can be king of the earth for 36. No, you will not take birth again. That's your success. Sa eva sado charamo bhavanam. This is the last birth you're going to take. Because I'm granting you my mercy. By my blessings, you will not take birth again. Because you came to me in this secluded place when I'm renouncing the whole world. You followed me. I'm not angry at you for doing this, even though it was technically in violation of my instruction. But I appreciate your attachment and devotion to me. Therefore, I'm blessing you that you won't take birth again. It's actually an unnecessary blessing. Uddhava is actually an eternal associate, but this is the lila, the pastime. And here's an additional blessing. Not only that, that's, you're liberated. What else? In the beginning of creation, in my form of Narayan, I spoke the Bhagavatam to Brahma in four verses. I'm going to teach the same to you right now. Before you get your liberation, I'm going to speak you the instructions of the Bhagavatam. In more than four verses, it comes out to about 23 chapters. Of the 11th canto. A large part of the 11th canto is known as the Uddhava Gita, Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. So chronologically, this is where Krishna begins those instructions. They're not given here in the 3rd canto, but this is when Krishna spoke them, just before he left the planet. Sitting under the banyan tree, Uddhava approached him. These words were spoken, and Krishna promises, now I'm going to speak to you the same instructions of Bhagavatam that I taught Brahma. Prabhupada says in the commentary I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Text 20. Sri Uddhava's actual life is the direct symbol of the Chaturk Shloki Bhagavatam. In other words, Uddhava, the way he lived his life, he was the personification of those instructions that Brahma received. So, hearing this from Krishna, Uddhava reacted ecstatically. He cried, his hairs were standing on end, folded his hands, and responded to Krishna. I'm jumping back to on verse 14 again, yeah?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
There's something in Prabhupada's book for 20, I wanted to hear you speak
on verse 20?
Yeah.
Why don't we wait till we get back to it? I was just jumping ahead. Now we're on verse 14 again, or 15. Uddhava's comment, what he says in response to Krishna just blessed him pretty heavily. You can be liberated, and I'm going to speak the Bhagavatam to you. Someone who gains that kind, who gets those blessings of the Lord, especially one who receives the divine knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, he can have anything he wants. You can use the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam to achieve anything, material or spiritual. And Uddhava acknowledges this. He says, devotees who engage in your loving service, there's nothing that they can't achieve among the four goals of human endeavor. Artha, kama, moksha. Artha, kama, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. Anything in those categories is available easily to your pure devotees. But all I want is to be engaged in your loving service. I'm not going to take advantage of this opportunity wrongly. I just want to be serving you. Pure devotee, like Prabhupada says, pure devotee as Uddhava refuses to accept all such facilities. Then Uddhava comments that it really bewilders me. You are the absolute truth. You're free from all material desires, all desires. But you're engaging in work, ordinary material work, fruitive work in this world. You're the unborn, eternal, supreme, but you took your birth in this world. You're self-satisfied, invincible, controller of time. Everyone's destruction The cause of everybody's fear is time, primarily. Even the greatest conquerors, the greatest demons, the greatest controllers of the universe, they're all defeated by time. But Krishna, you're the controller of time. Time has no effect on you. Still, you're running away from your enemies out of fear and taking shelter in this Dwarka fort. And in that fortress of Dwarka, hiding from your enemies, you're surrounded by all your queens, enjoying with women just like an ordinary materialist, even though you are the greatest of self-satisfied mystics. So this is very bewildering to me. This is Uddhava's ecstasy. Of course he understands Krishna. He knows us all theoretically, philosophically. He studied Vedanta. He knows what the absolute truth is. But for one who's participating in those pastimes, who's actually tasting the rasa, there's a constant, even though you see it every day, even though you're with Krishna constantly, how Krishna can be like this, how the absolute truth can behave like this, is a constant source of astonishment for the devotees, for devotees of this caliber. That's rasa. It's all, you're always amazed, just amazed by what's going on, by how Krishna can be like this. And how Krishna, unaffected by time, this is verse 17, there's no limitation to your perfect knowledge. Now time, even if you have great intelligence, even if you amass great, masses of knowledge, that's limited by time. You get old, and everything you knew, you start forgetting. By the time if you live long enough to get old, you forget everything you know practically. And then you have to take birth again by the force of time, covered by ignorance, and you have to go to school and learn it all over again. Start off as a bawling, ignorant baby, and over the course of years, learn the things all over again. This is how our knowledge is limited by time, by birth and death. But Krishna, you're not affected by time. And still, you're coming to me asking for advice, as if you were ignorant, like other people. You may be 125 years old, but there's no effect of senility on you. It's not that you need some young man to tell you what to do. But still, you're coming to me. You were constantly coming to me for advice. Every day, it's described that Krishna would never do anything without anything important, make any decision, political decision, without consulting Uddhava first. That bewilders Uddhava. And after submitting these prayers, then Uddhava says, okay, if you think I'm fit to hear it, please, you just promised this to me, please go ahead and tell me the Bhagavatam as you told it to Brahma, or give me a more elaborate form of it. Knowledge about yourself, that's what I want to know. I want to become more attached to you. The only knowledge I'm interested in is knowledge about you. How can I understand you better? That's Bhagavatam knowledge. And then Uddhava says, yes, and then Krishna agreed to speak to me, the instructions of the Bhagavatam. And then, if you want, you can insert here most of the 11th canto at this point. This is where Krishna spoke his instructions to Uddhava. We read in the 11th canto, we'll read that section later on, after Uddhava heard all of Krishna's instructions, he thanked him, bowed down with tears in his eyes, circumambulated him, and went off to carry out the instructions. He left Krishna and went to Bhadrakashram. And that's what Uddhava describes in verse 20. I have studied the path of understanding self-knowledge from my spiritual master, the Personality of Godhead. And thus, after circumambulating him, I have come to this place very much aggrieved due to separation. So Uddhava, in his life and his attitude, is perfect personification of the instructions of the Bhagavatam. He's the living person, Bhagavatam. He's certainly a fit person to hear Bhagavatam from the Personality of Godhead himself. these four verses, Prabhupada mentions how they're studied and misinterpreted by the Mayavadis. They twist them around, the meaning of them around. But actually, only the person who... Prabhupada really makes the point here that only the person who is coming to the rare level of the ecstasy of serving Krishna in separation, only the person who knows the taste of Viraha Bhava can fully understand the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. That Prabhupada says, is it this purport? I think. Okay. So you had a comment on this? Oh, okay. Prabhupada makes this point. If you want to really understand the message of the Bhagavatam, then you have to understand Viraha Bhava. Because here are the primary speakers. Uddhava, of course, Maitreya did the talking, but Krishna gave very confidential instructions to Uddhava, and Maitreya was there listening. And then Maitreya repeated these instructions to Vidura. But Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, who had attained the full appreciation of that sentiment of separation. He learned it from the gopis when he went to Vrindavan. He saw the gopis in their ecstasy of separation from Krishna after Krishna had left them and gone to Mathura. Uddhava was the witness of that. And he was capable of very deeply understanding the mood of the gopis. And now he's experiencing it for himself. The separation is about... There's different kinds of separation, different aspects of separation. There's imminent separation that you haven't been separated yet. Then there's separation, temporary separation. Then there's separation for someone who's gone for a long time. These are different kinds of it. So he's experiencing the imminent separation. Krishna is about to leave. That's another special kind of viraha bhava.
I find a little, it seems to be a little bit of contradiction. They talk about in text number 19 in the purport, Prabhupada writes, the large transcendental situation was not even spoken of to Brahma.
Oh, yeah.
When the four verses between the Bhagavad and the
Bhagavad. Yeah, because the four verse Bhagavatam, that Krishna's instructions to Uddhava are deeper, are fuller than what Krishna told Brahma in those four verses. Krishna is going to is telling to Uddhava things that even Brahma didn't hear, or a depth of understanding. Because Brahma's not in this Viraha Bhava. He came to Vrindavan and he learned something about the devotion of Vrindavan. And therefore Brahma prayed, let me take birth as a plant or a creeper here. That was one of Brahma's prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th Keto. Then later Uddhava prayed the same thing. Let me take birth as a creeper or a plant here. But their moods are not exactly the same. Brahma offered that prayer and he said, please give me your permission to leave. Let me go back to Brahmaloka. I don't belong here. If I stay here, I'm going to commit more offenses. Let me go away. So he prayed in my future life, let me take birth. As a plant in Vrindavan. But Uddhava prayed it, and he meant it. He intended to stay in Vrindavan. We'll read about that later. Uddhava is actually in that higher mood of Viraha Bhava. He wants to be in Vrindavan, remembering Krishna. Even Krishna's not there anymore. He wants to go to Vrindavan and just be able to meditate on Krishna in separation. Whereas Brahma, he asked, let me go back to Brahmaloka, where I belong.
From the four Chaturshloki verses, can one understand the significance of Viraha?
Yes, if we read the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti, because he always brings that out. He'll explain the four-verse Bhagavatam. He'll explain the Gayatri, the Brahma Gayatri mantra that's supposedly material. He explains all of these things. He explains the four Chaturshloki Bhagavad Gita, the four verses in the 12th chapter, 10th chapter. All in terms of Viraha Bhava, but that's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura, explaining it to us on the highest level. But Brahma didn't understand it like that. So Uddhava has a special capacity to receive even a deeper understanding of the Bhagavatam than Brahma did. But similar to Uddhava is Shukadeva Goswami, who was also capable of appreciating the mood of separation of the Vrijabhasis. Therefore, he's the person who was appointed to speak the Vrajalila to Parikshit Maharaj. Because Shukadev, although he's not a participant, just like Uddhava is not a participant, he's able to understand and to explain perfectly. He knows that mood of the Vrijabhasis, of separation, even the mood of the gopis. Shukadev also knows. Shukadev does not mention the name of Radharani in the Bhagavatam, not because, you know, he's in a different mood, but because he's in the mood of the gopis, and if he mentions his name, he'll lose control of himself. So therefore, out of respect and out of fear of not being able to continue the narration, he doesn't mention her name, Shukadev. So Shukadev and Uddhava are especially the best persons to receive that knowledge and to pass it on to others. If you want to fully understand the complete message of Bhagavatam, everything the Bhagavatam has to offer, you should come to this level, the level of Viraha Bhava. Then you can. That's the complete message of the Bhagavatam, or the deepest message. If you can't, then you can get many. You can get everything else out of the Bhagavatam, but there's a secret. There's a secret message there, most mysterious message. It's only available to those who are on the level of Uddhava and Shukadev. Now, we should become the disciples, Shiksha disciples of Uddhava and Shukadev. Then we can come to this level. Yes? What I just said? Let me say it another way. About... Well, we should become Shiksha disciples. We should learn from these speakers, Shukadev Goswami, Uddhava, and then we can come to their, we can approach their level of love for Krishna. You know, how do you get these higher ecstasies, this higher taste of devotional service? By serving and getting the blessings and the instructions of those who have this higher insight. It does not come by some cheap imitation. I may think, well, I'm very advanced in devotional service. I'll just run off to Radhakund, and meditate, on all the intimate things. First, get the blessings of those who have that competency, who are on that level. Serve them. Follow their instructions. And if they're pleased with you and give you their blessings, then you can approach. But on your own, none of us have the strength or the we don't have the right to jump into these things until we're invited. Yes. Yes.
Is that because it's premature?
Because.
Because he's
Premasaya?
Why is that? What is his role in?
Because he's the Adi Guru. He is Lord Balaram. And although Balaram doesn't participate in Krishna's dealings with his girlfriends, but he's promoting it. Yeah. If you want to enter into that most confidential realm, you have to get the blessings of Lord Nityananda. I think we have to go to the six Goswamis, but we have to get the blessings of Lord Nityananda to approach the six Goswamis.
Also, there's an article by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the comments where he explains that it's necessary to get the mercy of Nityananda for you. He's the one who actually recommends you to the inner circle of Srimati Radhakrishna.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So Lord Balaram, because Krishna is his brother, doesn't meddle in these, doesn't stick his nose in these internal affairs, but he's supporting them. He's arranging for conditioned souls to be able to come to these things. Yes, ma'am?
I can kind of understand that Shukadeva Goswami being the power of Krishna,
You can't understand what Uddhava's qualification is? You can't understand. You can see that Shukadeva's qualified because of his original identity. But you can't see why Uddhava has... Why is it Uddhava's allowed to be... This is... Because of his very intimate connection with Krishna, Krishna gave him that power. You can't compare it to anything else. Uddhava is a unique person. Yeah. So you can't say, well, just like somebody else, he did this and that. No, just Krishna just gave him this special, put him in this special position. Because he's a very special, unique devotee of Krishna. Yeah. By Krishna says, Madanugrahat. I'm going to teach you the secret of Bhavatam that even Brahma didn't understand it. You're going to be able to understand it because of my mercy on you, because I'm giving you my blessings. That's all.
Yes? I was just going to mention that past time in the walk when Krishna collapsed in remembrance of the statues.
Yes.
Uddhava was there and Balaram, and both of them organized together to take Krishna to Vrindavan.
Uddhava was there. That's in Dvarka, though.
Yeah,
that's described. I think you're talking about what's described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We're going to read part. We're going to read that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lord Brahma was also involved in that too, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Uddhava is facilitating Krishna's intimate pastimes. Sutta? I don't know. Well, I don't know. I don't know who he was in a previous life. I can't say what's his personal qualification, how he got to be what he is. He had the blessings of Vyasadeva. He was a favorite, one of the best students of Vyasadeva. At least, the students of Vyasadeva who Vyasadeva taught the Puranas, Sutta Goswami got, what is it? Bruhit, Veda Twam, Veda Tat, Somya Tat Sarvam, Tatvatas Tadanugrahat. The Shonika says to Sutta that you understand the essence of all these Puranic literatures. Tadanugrahat, again, Anugraha. By the blessings of Vyasadeva and your other teachers. Because
father,
you satisfied them.
It's
Roma Harsha. Yeah. It said that Sutta also studied from Vyasadeva and others. From his father. But he also went and studied directly from Sutta Goswami, Ugrashrava, also studied from Vyasadeva directly. And from other sages. That's Shonaka Rishi mentions that. You studied from Vyasadeva. Yeah, so Badarayana was one of your teachers. Vyasadeva taught Sutta Goswami. And because Sutta Goswami pleased his teachers, because he was a faithful student, listened carefully, followed their instructions, didn't go running off to Radhakund. Yeah. Therefore, that he got their blessings and he was blessed. He was blessed by Lord Balaram. Balaram said, I will install, I've killed Rama Harshana, I'm sorry. I'm blessing his son, that he'll be empowered to speak to you perfectly, all the Puranas, and he'll live long in order to do this. That was Lord Balaram's blessing. So he got the blessings of Balaram, blessings of Vyasadeva and his other teachers. Therefore, he's empowered to speak Bhagavatam. This is the key. To get the blessings of those who have the power to understand Bhagavatam, we have to get their blessings and then satisfy them. And then we'll be able to understand and practice this intimate devotional service. It cannot be imitated cheaply with success. Then we become sadhus. If we don't go through the standard process. Okay, I wanted to also read another passage from Brihad Bhagavatamrita about Uddhava. This is a continuation of what we were reading yesterday, just picking up from What was it yesterday? Oh yeah, Narada Muni was describing how Uddhava served Krishna so intimately and praising Uddhava. This is chapter 5, and I'm starting from the next verse, verse 126, and reading about 7 more verses with the commentaries of Sanatana Goswami. Now this whole narration of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita was, according to Sanatana Goswami, was originally spoken by Parikshit to his mother, Uttara. After Parikshit, this is described at the beginning of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, after Parikshit had heard the 7 days of the Bhagavatam and was waiting for Taksha to come and kill him, it was, he expected to have a few minutes for the rest of his life. His mother showed up at the last minute. Of course, the mother's, naturally anxiety, her son's about to die. But her real anxiety, she expressed to him, what I'm really in anxiety about is that I didn't get to hear this Bhagavatam. Now, I wasn't here. Now I'm here at the last minute. I missed it. We have a few minutes. Could you tell me, could you distill the essence of the Bhagavatam and tell me quickly what you heard from Shukadev? And what Parikshit told his mother, that's the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Of course, it took a couple of hours because of the auspiciousness of this recital. The time was stretched out, and Taksha didn't show up for a few hours. It was Bhrigu Muni was trying to stop him. So Taksha showed up a little late, Indian Standard Time. Yeah. And therefore, 2,600 verses of Brihad Bhagavatamrita were spoken by Parikshit. So Parikshit's speaking here after talking, describing how the interaction between Uddhava and Narada. I'll be the Sanskrit. Shri Parikshita Vacha Matar Ityadikam Shutva Mahasaubhagyam Uttamam Uddhavasya Munir Geham Gantum Harsha Prakarshataha. Shri Parikshit said, "Dear mother, after hearing these and other exalted glories of Uddhava, Narada Muni, overjoyed, became eager to go to Uddhava's house." Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I was confused. I'm thinking of the previous day's discussion when Gopakumar was there. This is Narada coming on his journey through the universe. He comes to Dwarka, and Ugrasen and the other Yadus are telling Narada that you really have to go meet Uddhava. He's the best of us. He's greater than the rest of us. They have to admit that you're Narada Muni, whatever you speak is true, so we have to accept your praise. And then they try to deflect or divert him by saying, well, you go see Uddhava. He's better than the rest of us. So Narada Muni is very eager to go visit Uddhava in his house. Uttaya tasya digbhaga vartma datum samudyataha gyatvokto yadurajena chitra prema vikara bhak. Showing various symptoms of ecstasy, Narada stood up, ready to set off in that direction. Noting this, King Ugrasena spoke up. Shrimad Ugrasena uvacha, Bhagavan uktamevasau kshanam ekam api kvachit nanyatra tishtati shasya krishnas yadeshato vina. Shriman Ugrasena told Narada, "My lord, it is said that without Krishna's order, Uddhava never leaves Krishna's presence even for a moment." Forgot this. Could you pass around the sign-up sheet? Uddhava never leaves Krishna's presence even for a moment. Yataham pratya tatsanga stitim napnomi karhichit tanmaha labato hino satyaya rajya rakshyaya. In contrast, despite my begging to stay in Krishna's company, I never obtained that blessing. I am deprived of that achievement because of my degraded occupation of protecting the kingdom. Srila Sanatana Goswami's comment. By saying that Uddhava never leaves the Lord's presence, Ugrasena indirectly advises Narada not to look for Uddhava in his home. At the same time, he also made the point, because Uddhava is probably off with Krishna someplace, don't look for him in his house. At the same time, he also made the point that he, Ugrasena, was not at all as great as Narada said he was. At least he was not as great as Uddhava, whom Krishna always kept by his side. Ugrasena's kingdom was indeed a gift from Krishna, granted after his son, Kamsa, fell from the throne. Kamsa is Ugrasena's son. Actually, he's not his son. His wife, Padmavati, was seduced by a demon called Gobila, and the offspring was Kamsa. So it was an illegitimate son of Ugrasena. Anyway, Krishna killed Kamsa and then gave Ugrasena the throne. But the kingdom was a mixed blessing, a kingdom always in danger of conquest by various enemies. To make Ugrasena accept the throne, Krishna had to resort to duplicity. He had asked Ugrasena to watch after Mathura because the kingdom needed to be guarded against certain threats while the Lord traveled elsewhere. In fact, however, no such threats existed. We read in the Sri Harivamsa, this is one of the Harivamsa Purana, that during Rukmini Swayamvara, Lord Krishna told Ugrasena, the words are here, "O tiger among kings, please stay here with my brother, Balaram. There are many warriors who externally follow the rules of scripture, but whose intelligence is perverted. When those kings find the city vacant, with no ruler in place, they will attack it and impose terror." So Krishna is trying to convince Ugrasena to stay back and sit on the throne. Ugrasena replied to Krishna. This is recorded in the Harivamsa. "Without your presence, none of us citizens can live peacefully in this city or its outlying districts, just as women cannot live happily without their husbands. Dear son, we all consider you our master. We depend on the shelter of your mighty arms. Therefore, O creator of our honor, we fear no earthly kings, nor even Indra, the king of heaven. Wherever you go to find victory in battle, O best and first and best of the Yadus, you should take us with you." Okay, then continuing, Ugrasena still talking here. "I delight in only one real honor, being able to carry out Krishna's orders. But the false honor he shows me simply torments me and leaves me feeling cheated. No other devotee of the Lord is ever cheated like this. But as far as Uddhava goes, he enjoys the greatest happiness. Privileged to stay by Krishna's side, he is never deprived of Krishna's association. Therefore, please go to Uddhava quickly and convey from us this message. The appointed time today has come. Today to come to the assembly hall has already passed. Kindly bring Krishna and grace the assembly with our master's presence." So anyway, we're reading, this is a depiction of how Uddhava was always in Krishna's association. He never left Krishna's service in their sambhoga, in their the many years that they were in constant companionship. And his devotional service only increased late when he had to be separated from Krishna. That we read about in the passages from the third canto. The glories of Uddhava in this state of shock of the imminent separation from Krishna. And then what we read just yesterday about how Uddhava expressed his ecstasies after Krishna's disappearance to Vidura. So this is a very unique devotee who's constantly connected with Krishna, both in sambhoga and viraha, both in contact and separation. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah.
I'm just thinking of this concept of approach to the Bhagavatam.
Or approach to devotional service in general.
Yeah. But unless one has that, he's just given the knowledge and has a rasatmik
You can no, you can understand the Bhagavatam on that level. You can learn about Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti from Srimad Bhagavatam.
So we are forced to be in that level, more or less?
Well, so yes, if you don't... Yeah. If you're learning the Bhagavatam from those who are only mixed devotees, then you'll only learn mixed devotion from the Bhagavatam. You have to learn the Bhagavatam from a devotee who's fully qualified. Then you can get the full benefit. When you learn the Bhagavatam from a pure devotee of the highest standard, then you get the full message. You learn it from a mixed devotee, an inferior devotee, then you get an inferior level of understanding.
But don't we attract that kind of person who's suitable to our level? Like if we have so much knowledge in our heart, then obviously we're going to attract
Darshan of the first people of Bhagavatam. Nashtapayeshwa bhajveshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Then we should regularly serve the Bhagavatam. We should hear the Bhagavatam every day, and we should be constantly engaged in the service of the pure devotees. Now, Srila Prabhupada gave us his Srimad Bhagavatam with his purports. So we have access to studying Srimad Bhagavatam from the highest level devotee. We just have to serve Prabhupada. Hear from his book, read his books constantly, and be constantly engaged in carrying out his mission. Then we get his blessings, and we'll get the highest understanding. No, then we'll get the rasa. This is the way to get the rasa, not to run off to Radha Kund. Yes, sir.
Could you elaborate also on the other term? Is one term is from Vipralanda Seva and Vira. Is there a connection to each other?
I think it's synonymous. Yeah, Vipralanda is at least one meaning of it is separation.
Yep. Separation.
Yeah, if you want to know. You know, more about it, you can study Sanatana Goswami's explanations in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, especially the second part. You know, he gives elaborate explanation of what this Vihara Bhava is. Of course, you can also read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yes?
Who is Uddhava in Lord Chaitanya's
pastime? Yeah, I think he doesn't show up. Brihaspati is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, but Uddhava himself, does anybody know? Uddhava and I don't think he's listed by Kavi Karnapur that so and so is Uddhava. Yeah, in his, you know, Gorgonadesh Deepika, Kavi Karnapur tells us. Which associates of Krishna became particular associates of Lord Chaitanya? I don't think Uddhava is on the list. Maybe because he's still in this world. Yeah. So he wasn't available. I'm not sure. Maybe he's there somewhere. Maybe he sees somebody. His teacher, Devahaspati, became Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Narada Muni? Well, Srivast Thakur has empowered expansion of Narada Muni. Okay. Now, if you want to find Uddhava, I can tell you where to look, but we'll hold off on that until the last few days. He can be found. Yeah.
Yesterday you said that the Supadev Goswami and Maitreya, they were Jnana Mishra Bhaktas, or
they played like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya himself. You know, he was acting like a Mayavadi. He's an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya. It was just a leela. The Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya pretended to be a dry scholar. Same thing with Uddhava and Shukadev. They're eternal associates of Krishna.
Maitreya,
I'm not sure.
Become good preachers or they are good narrators of the knowledge.
Yes.
But first they have
this background, a Gyani background, is a good qualification to be a solid feature of Bhagavatam, yeah.
Is that something where we are at? We have to go through that station, some kind of going through a...
Well, we don't have to separately cultivate knowledge. If we, you want to become a Gyani, study Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, you know, life is short, and many of us are starting devotional service from our middle ages, 20 or 30. We're starting devotional service. If you were 3 years old, then we could train you up thoroughly. But we're already starting. We're already too old. So we should concentrate on studying Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the textbook that has the most anyway. You want the essential knowledge about everything? Study Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't have time to be reading all these other books. Jiva Goswami was ordered by Lord Nityananda to go to Benares and study Vedanta, finish his education. He was on his way to Vrindavan. He went to Navadvip to see it once before going to Vrindavan to join Rupa and Sanatan, his uncles. But Lord Nityananda told him, you stop first and spend some time, this means a couple of years, or at least 6 months or something, and you study Vedanta further in depth and you finish your education. So, Lord Nityananda wanted Jiva Goswami to be fully trained up as a philosopher. But that's under the direct order of the Lord. We shouldn't get distracted and think that we should become Gyanis first. And that'll make us better preachers. Because we don't have time for it. And we're likely to become distracted and forget, we'll become involved in everything else and forget about Srimad Bhagavatam. If we're ordered, if that's our service, and if someone gets trained up from a young age, then he can be trained thoroughly. it's a scholar. I still look, even if you want to spend 20 years becoming, a real devotional scholar, I think the education should be centered around Srimad Bhagavatam anyway. That's where all kinds of knowledge are packed into Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no need to go to other books. Read what Sanatana Goswami has to say. You'll see how he finds everything in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, we can stop here. So we skip tomorrow and meet the next day? And then
the
homework...
Class tomorrow, too.
Oh.
So nice.
Okay, well... Oh.
Depends on the program we have in the temple.
Yeah, I don't want... I guess we should go for that. Yeah, I mean, we'll make up for it by having one more, one less day for the weekend. All right, thank you all. Shiva Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.